presented by the American Petroleum Institute.
I got a text from somebody who told me I was kicked off.
In late November of 2022, Senator Rick Scott received a text from an aide to Mitch McConnell. In the new Congress, the terse message informed him Scott would no longer be a member of the powerful Commerce Committee. It was the latest rupture in their relationship.
There's nothing you can do about it.
All through the 2022 cycle, Scott, then the chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and McConnell, the Republican leader, hoping to graduate to majority leader, battled over strategy. McConnell and his top aides questioned Scott's fundraising prowess, his candidate recruitment, his policy agenda, and even his decision to take a vacation in the middle of the campaign. While Republicans took back the House, over in the Senate, Democrats expanded to a one-seat majority.
You always have to say to yourself, you know, what else could you always do? I mean, we need to have an overall plan. We didn't. Okay. But if you're the NRSC chair, you don't get to do that. That was driven by the leader of the Senate, who made the decision not to have a plan. He was very clear.
In the middle of being dumped on for that failure, Scott brazenly challenged McConnell for Republican leader, a suicide mission encouraged by Donald Trump. Scott won 10 votes in that secret ballot election. He said the text came about a week later. It was, Scott believed, retaliation for his challenge. The Scott-McConnell feud has never really subsided. Scott has led a band of senators on the right who have challenged McConnell on top priorities, such as aid to Ukraine, and voted against crucial legislation that McConnell supported, such as a debt limit extension and continuing resolutions to keep the government funded. This week, Rick Scott announced that he will once again run for Mitch McConnell's job. Things will be a little different this time. McConnell is stepping down as leader after the election, and Scott will be facing John Thune and John Cornyn, the only other declared candidates in the race. But Scott's message is still about McConnell. In a letter to fellow Republican senators on Wednesday, he pitched his candidacy as a way to upend the status quo in Washington. And he detailed a list of process grievances he says Republicans have been burdened with under McConnell's long reign, complaining about a lack of transparency, too many backroom deals cut in secret, and caving in to Democrat demands.
I'd be clear, if people don't think we need to change, then they shouldn't pick me, right? So pick somebody else.
I visited Scott the morning after his surprise entry into the leadership race, and we talked about why he's running, what Donald Trump told him about his decision, his relationship with key Republicans, such as McConnell and Susie Wiles, his policy agenda on foreign aid, abortion, entitlements, and Israel if he's elected leader, Trump's running mate choices, and the importance of having a purpose in life. I'm Ryan Lizza, and this is Playbook Deep Dive. Let's talk about Donald Trump a little bit. He encouraged you to run for leader in 2022. What did he say this time to you about running?
I've known him since before I was governor. So he's a friend. I called and told him I was going to do it. Yesterday.
Yesterday, you did.
I called him yesterday. And so he said he's excited I'm getting in. So.
Did you ask him to endorse you?
So I'm going to try to, of course, get him to support I'm going to try to get everybody.
Just give us a little bit of, show us a little leg on this conversation. What did he say?
Well, no, what I did yesterday, I just told him I'm running.
And did he say that, that's great? I wish you well.
He said I'm excited. I mean, he was excited that I'm running.
He's encouraged Steve Daines to jump in. Some people thought that you might do this, but that you would do it after your reelection, which you gotta get reelected first.
I know it won't matter.
Why'd you do it now?
Oh, I was ready to do it. I want to make sure that we have a legitimate conversation about how are we going to change the Senate. Our country's in trouble. We need a seat change. And so I'm going to do everything I can to make sure we have a real conversation about what are the things we can do to start fixing the problems of the country.
At some point, would you like Trump to endorse your candidacy?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you buy that he's been pushing Danes into the race?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it.
Did you talk to Susie Wiles, who's a good friend
Susie
of yours?
Susie was my first campaign manager, I've known Susie a long time.
You know her
I
very long
Susie.
Time.
I told Susie I did.
And what'd she say?
I don't know. I don't know that she said anything other than, you know, she wished me the best of luck. Mm-hmm. Susie's been a good friend.
Do you think she, I mean, does the fact that you guys have known each other so long?
I don't think Susie endorses.
No, but I mean, you got a little bit of an in. I mean, I know you know Trump, but you also know her. So do you think you have the inside track here because of that relationship?
I think President Trump makes his own choices. Susie's doing a really good job. I think Trump's run a really good race and he's going to have a big win.
We got to talk a little bit about your chairmanship of the NRSC, because when I called around to Senate offices and was asking people about what I should ask you, it came up a lot. And I know this is like the longest running, internal debate in the Senate conference. I don't want to relitigate all of it, but you know the criticisms of your chairmanship in 2022. And I want you to just take a second and sort of address them in one place, because this is going to come up again and again, I assume. Just globally, it wasn't considered a success. Republicans did not take back the Senate. The House Republicans did take back the House. You said in your letter that any success I had in business was based on acknowledging challenges and mistakes. And you also talked about holding ourselves accountable for mistakes and failure. So, did you fail in 2022?
Well, we didn't get a majority. I tried. So we worked hard to get a majority. We didn't get a majority. So you always have to say to yourself, okay, so what else could you always do? I mean, we need to have an overall plan. We didn't. Okay, but if you're the NRSC chair, you don't get to do that. That was driven by the leader of the Senate, who made the decision not to have a plan. He was very clear.
You had one. You had the 12-point plan.
Yeah. Well, I had
and
my
he said
plan.
No. He said,
so I didn't ever ask anybody else to accept my plan. But I believe that we ought to run on something.
But that wasn't your plan. You weren't running for re-election. That wasn't your personal plan. That was
it was my plan.
Right, but it was just
100% my plan. I never asked one other person to ever adopt it. Nobody. I never asked anybody to adopt it. I said, this is what I believe in.
But wasn't the understanding if Republicans take back the Senate, this is what we'll do?
No.
It's what Senator Scott wants to do.
I was always clear. This is what I believe that we ought to do. And I still to this day believe that, look at my elections. I have a plan. Every election. In 2010, I had a 7-step plan to 700,000 jobs over 7 years. Okay, in 2018 when I ran, I said, my plan is to make Washington work for you. Okay, and so I always have a plan.
You have the 8-point plan in your letter yesterday.
Yep. So I always have a plan. I think if you go back to 22, it's very difficult to win, right, without a plan. And so, I was clear that we ought to have a plan. We can't just say they're bad. But look. Would I have liked them got a majority? Absolutely. I want to be in the majority.
I just want to go through some of the criticisms. A couple are the in the primaries that you declined to interfere in open GOP Senate primaries, which led to some very weak candidates. The classic example is Herschel Walker in Georgia. Is that a fair criticism?
Well, I'm being very clear. I don't believe that Washington, D.C. should be picking candidates. I don't believe it. In 2010, when I ran against an individual that had every endorsement in the country, right? And
just remind listeners who that was, if they
Bill McCollum, and he had every endorsement. Everybody endorsed him, and I ran against him.
Longtime GOP congressman,
and good person. In the beginning, the only Republicans that talked to me were the ones that told me to get out. And I believe that I won because I represented what Florida voters cared about at the time.
Right. So the GOP primary voters should make that decision,
absolutely.
Not D.C. Did that personal experience drive you in 2022?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've always believed that. Yeah. I always believed that that you know, Washington, D.C. shouldn't decide who the candidate is. And I don't believe that. To this day, I don't believe it.
Any of the other criticisms fair from that era? I mean, I'll just throw them out because I don't want to go through them all. But there were criticisms that you didn't raise enough money, that you set expectations too high, that you didn't.
I think we did pretty well. I think you go back and look at the numbers. I think we did pretty well in fundraising. But you know, look, would you always like to raise more money? Yeah, you like to raise more money. But if you look at the numbers, I think the committee did a really good job.
Is there anything that's sort of a lesson learned from that experience?
I think the thing that surprised us was the amount of money Planned Parenthood and their affiliates spent. You know, if you look at our candidates actually did a very good job. On the issues, but you know, I think you just always try to look at every experience and say, what can you do better? And so, yeah, I mean, look, you can always raise more money and so everything. I mean, anytime you don't win, you can always come up with something you could do.
For nearly 4 years, the American people have faced the pain of high inflation and global conflict. Now, more than ever, it's time to end political gamesmanship and implement policies that help benefit Americans. Let's work together on solutions that help address the consequences of inflation and secure our energy future. Visit lightsonenergy.com/energyleadership to learn more.
Let's start with what you bring to the table that John Cornyn and John Thune don't in this leadership race.
Well, first off, what I always talk about is, you know, what I'm trying to do. So if you look at my background, I'm a turnaround guy. I mean, I turned around companies and then I turned around Florida. I ran when Florida was in trouble financially and people were leaving the state actually. So what I bring to the table is I think there ought to be dramatic change here. I think if you look at almost $35 trillion of debt, the border, inflation crisis, all these things are coming to a head. And so what I bring to the table is I think there has to be not minor change, there has to be a sea change up here. And so that's what I've said, because I've been clear, if people don't think we need to change, then they shouldn't pick me, right? So pick somebody else.
And maybe it's a little too early to sort of specify these differences, but you wouldn't be running if you didn't think that you were better able to lead the GOP conference than John and John. Your letter suggested this, so I'm going to ask it directly. Are they just McConnell clones, the two of them?
Well, I don't look at it as I look at it as a race about how do you want to be governed. That's why I put in there, I was very specific of what I would change. And so the way I look at it is everybody will have a choice up here about how do you want to be governed. When I talk to people are frustrated that we don't have bills that go through committee. We don't have amendment votes. People feel like sort of disenfranchised. They don't have any input on a lot of the stuff and we're surprised. And so What I've actually run on is, okay, so I've listened to what people have said since I've been up here, right? And I've said I think we ought to have a big change. I know the country needs a big change, and and this is what I bring to the table. So what I hope is what happens here is we have a real legitimate conversation about how Republican senators ought to be governed.
Right, but so much of your case and what you just laid out there is a rebuke of the current leadership of McConnell. And I can't help but throw this quote out. When Trump endorsed you for re-election this year for senator, he said, quote, you're the only person who has been willing to take on the very destructive super rhino Mitch McConnell. Is that true?
Well, I'm the only person that was willing to run against, Leader McConnell, and I've been very clear that I think we have to have dramatic change. We shouldn't be doing omnibus bills. We should be having appropriation bills. We should have a budget. we should have legitimate fights over, you know, conservative ideas. And the way I look at always look at things is give me a chance to sell something. But when I don't even have an opportunity to have an amendment vote, when I don't even have to have any input on a bill, that's not the way the Senate was organized. The Senate is supposed to be organized where we all get to represent our states. And I really believe in that. And so when I ran against McConnell, I mean, I was clear, these are the things I think we need to change. Now, if you look at where our country is in deep trouble. If you look at any poll, Americans are saying they think we have real problems. And so I think our problems, some of it caused because we haven't done what our Constitution set up, represent your state.
You got 10 votes when you ran against McConnell at the end of 2022. What makes you think that you can do better this time around against Thune and Cornyn?
Well, I've listened, and when I talk to people are frustrated. They're frustrated that that they don't have any input in how things are going here. On top of that, I think Trump's going to win. I think it's important to have somebody that is going to help Trump, get his agenda passed. At the same time, represent senators' interest. And the way you represent senators' interest is you give them input. Look, I ran companies, right? The way you succeed at companies is you build management teams. So I think we ought to be doing the same thing here. We ought to say, what do we want to accomplish? And then who's going to get us there, right? And that's what – so I've tried to express what I think I've heard from my colleagues, and then they're going to have a choice.
I want to get to the agenda that you just alluded to, especially if Trump is president. But one other thing on the current leader, because so much of this race is going to be defined by this Republican who has been leader for so long, is what do you give him credit for? I mean, you've laid out some things that people are frustrated with during his tenure. What has he done well?
I think what a lot of people would say is that when Garland wasn't confirmed, that allowed Trump to have the opportunity to pick an additional Supreme Court justice, and which allowed us to have the Supreme Court we have today. So that's probably one of the biggest things.
Judges.
Yeah.
But you give Trump more credit than McConnell for that one.
Well, I mean, the president gets to pick, right? You have to admire that Trump was able to win as a complete outsider in 2016. I think he'll win this time, and he had the opportunity to pick, and he did. He picked three good Supreme Court justices.
After you ran against McConnell,
but he wouldn't have the opening for one of them, right, if it hadn't been for McConnell and the Republican conference holding it open. So,
after you challenged McConnell, you've said that he retaliated against you in a couple of ways. What did he do?
Well, I got kicked off committee. I got kicked off Commerce. I think I've never done a real study of this, but I think I probably run the biggest company of anybody that's ever served in the Senate before. I mean, I had 285,000 employees. I've done business all my life, and. So Mike Lee, who nominated me, and I got kicked off of Commerce. I mean, that's clearly retaliation. No offense, what's about it?
When that happens, is it communicated in that way, or is it sort of denied at the official level?
I got a text.
From?
I got a text from somebody who told me I was kicked off.
Like someone, a McConnell person, not him, not the leader himself.
Yeah.
It said, how soon after the vote?
I can't remember. I mean, probably a week.
Were there any? How did you respond?
Because we do. I mean, there's no, there's nothing you can do about it. So that's pretty frustrating. Mike Lee and I probably did, a vast majority of the Republican amendments the time I'd been on the committee. We were active committee members, and so. But look, it was just pure retaliation.
I heard you say on Charlie Kirk the other day that another stick that was used was to tell people not to give money to some of the rebels' campaigns. Did that happen to you?
Oh, it happened to me, yeah.
Yeah.
You told people not to give me money.
For this cycle, too?
Oh, yeah.
Has it damaged your fundraising?
Well, if they don't give me money, it does.
Well, I was just saying, like, do you have ways to make it up where it actually has a material impact?
I just work hard. And I mean, the way you fundraise is you talk to donors and you talk about why you're running and you try to convince them that it's a smart investment from their standpoint. So not everybody gives to you, but
make it up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some of the policies. In your letter to Republican senators, you have 8 promises, which I noticed are identical to the 8 promises in the similar letter you sent in November 2022. Yep. Number 6 says, I will lead the conference in developing a positive aspirational agenda that outlines our legislative goals and what Senate Republicans stand for. Have you given thought to those specifics yet?
So I think the way that should happen is, and by the way, this is, we're supposed to have legislative agenda in our bylaws, which we've never had since I've been up here, in our Republican bylaws.
The policy committee is supposed to come up with that?
Well, it was supposed to come up and the conference is supposed to have
an agenda. But is that like Joni Ernst's job on like
the I think it's all of our jobs. So the way it should happen is we ought to be meeting. So here's my experience in business. My experience in business is that you first decide what you would like to accomplish. If you're starting a company, and I start a lot of companies, but if you take over a company, which I've taken over companies also, you get your management team together and you say, okay, so what would we like to accomplish and how are we going to accomplish that? And the same thing should be happening here. We should be sitting down as a conference and saying, okay, so these are the problems of the country, right? The border's a problem, so how are we going to solve that? Inflation's a problem, so how are we going to solve that? Our military is behind in recruiting and readiness. How are we going to solve that? We have a president that doesn't support Israel and supports Gaza, which money goes to Hamas. How are we going to deal with these things? Even if we don't have the White House, it takes 60 votes in the Senate to pass things. So we have a voice. So how are we going to use our voice and act in concert to get more stuff done? The way you do that is you sit down with everybody. I've been up here 5 years. That's not what happens.
I want to ask you, you mentioned Israel and Gaza. You said recently that we have American hostages in Gaza. We have Rangers. We have Special Forces. We have Navy SEALs. I've never heard of one attempt to get any of the American hostages out of Gaza, not one. Should we use the U.S. military to rescue those hostages in Gaza?
We should look into it. But I've never heard one thing. I'm on armed services. I've never heard the military one time say they have any. They've even come up with a plan to try to get American hostages out. If I'm a hostage, I sure as hell hope my country would try to get me out wherever I am. And I've not heard that actually since Biden's been in office. I've not heard that anywhere in the country unless you're a basketball player.
What are the pros and cons of sending the U.S. military into Gaza to try and rescue American hostages?
Well, we ought to. That's what the military should be doing. The president should say, "Hey, look, maybe you can't do it, right? Maybe it's not possible. But if I was an American and I was stuck in Gaza, that the American president is asking his or her military say, okay, can you get me out? Could they get me out? I mean, that's what I'd hope.
Yeah.
I don't hear it anyway. I don't hear it at all.
From either party.
Well, it's up to the president. The president's the civilian commander in chief. It's 100% up to him. But I've not heard it. I've not heard any plans, any at all. And I sit on armed services. I go to all classified briefings. So none.
On abortion, you said that you support Florida's recently passed abortion law. As a Republican leader, would you work to pass similar legislation?
No, I think it all ought to be done at the state. I think the Supreme Court's made the decision; it ought to be done at the state level.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything should be done at the state level. I'm pro-life, right? And when I was governor, I signed every pro-life bill. If you look at where our state is, first off, I think we need to be very aggressive to make sure people have access to contraception. We don't make sure IVF is is legal, which it is in all 50 states. I have a family member going through IVF right now. We've got, and what I said in Florida is, if you look at the consensus in Florida today, is probably 15 weeks. So if I was writing a bill, you'd say it would be 15 weeks with the exceptions of life, or the mother, rape, and incest. But then I explained to people, I mean, the Democrats are extreme. They want you to pay for abortion. They want to crush a baby's skull at 9 months, and they want to leave a baby, a healthy baby born alive in the corner to die. I mean, that's extreme.
So why not? So would you work to pass a 15-week ban as Leader Scott with a President Trump?
No, it should be done at the state level.
So no legislation restricting abortion?
None. That should all be done at the state level.
Isn't that going to be very disappointing to a lot of pro-life activists that have supported you in Florida?
Well, I think it ought to be done. The Supreme Court made the decision. I think it ought to be done at the state level. Okay. First off, I think our federal government should focus on, the things that I think our primary goal, the federal government, is to defend our freedoms. And that's have a military that is ready to defend the freedoms of this country. And that's the primary goal of the federal government. I believe what we ought to be doing as leaders is say, okay, so what issues should we do at the federal level, and what issues should be done at the state level, and what issues should be done at the local level? I thought the same way when I was governor. I think whatever they can do locally, they should do locally.
On Ukraine, Mitch McConnell has recently been very sharply critical of Republicans who want to pull back from defending Ukraine. And in recent days, he has criticized conservatives who he says admire Viktor Orban. Do you think he has a fair argument here, or do you disagree with him on those two things?
Well, first off, I want Ukraine to win. I want Russia to lose. Now, but that doesn't mean I want to pay for the politicians' salaries in Ukraine. That doesn't mean I want to give Biden unlimited humanitarian money that he could possibly go give to Gazans, which goes to Hamas. Doesn't mean I want to pay for the pension plans of the politicians in Ukraine. So here's what's frustrating about the supplemental that Schumer and Biden put together. I didn't get an amendment vote. I had a simple amendment. I don't think any money ought to go to Hamas. That's not controversial. It would have passed overwhelmingly. It passed, I think, 99-1 or something before, right? And it was, and then Schumer stripped it out I think it was a reconciliation bill. But I didn't even get a vote. That's not the way this place ought to work. If I can't sell my ideas, that's my problem. Not getting the opportunity to sell my ideas and having bills that never went through committee. That means that, your vote doesn't, your thoughts don't even matter.
But at the end of the day, I mean, you voted against the supplemental, and you helped lead the charge against the Senate Republicans who voted against it. Are you saying that there's a version of aid to Ukraine that you would have supported?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've supported military aid to Ukraine, but I'm not, but I think there ought to be accountability, but that bill included $3 billion to allow Biden to bring in more unvetted Americans or illegals into this country. That's wrong. And giving, and by the way, we found out that, that is exactly what I thought would happen. I did an op-ed on it. Here's what's going to happen. He's going to give money to Gazans, which goes to Hamas. Hamas still controls Gaza. And then he's going to withhold aid to Israel. He did.
McConnell criticizing Republicans who seem to be interested and supportive of Viktor Orban. What do you make of that?
I haven't seen it.
All right. In 2022, you very famously put together a 12-point policy plan that was the subject of a lot of turbulence among Republicans. Excuse me. One of the big issues was your Social Security and Medicare reform proposals in that plan.
Nope, there's not one reform proposal in there.
Or what people interpreted as.
No, they lied about it. No, it's called a lie.
Okay.
What I said is, let's be realistic. Yeah. Let's be truthful what happened here. I think it's important that we preserve Medicare and Social Security.
Yeah.
This idea that we can run $2 trillion deficits and put no effort in trying to preserve those programs is wrong. And so If you look at what I said in there, is I said that we ought to tell the American public what we're going to do.
Right.
That's not controversial.
And a lot of Republicans said, no, we don't want to tell them because that's immediately going to be interpreted as
they lied
cuts.
And said they wanted to cut it. That was a complete lie. Actually, I have a bill that would preserve it. Okay. And so the and
can we, you the, reform the those two programs without any cuts?
Well, the first thing
in benefits,
if we want to preserve any program, why don't we start by getting everybody back to work? We have 100 million people in this country working age that are not working. Think about the revenue base we would have if all those people got back to work. Yeah. Think of the revenue base we have if we actually built a better economy. Right? We're killing our economy by causing energy prices to go up, which means that our competitiveness, when energy prices go up, the competitiveness of America goes down. That means we have less opportunity. If you look at my background, I built companies based on doing a better job of growing revenues, right? Which gives you the opportunity to control your costs, right? I grew Florida by adding, working with the private sector, I had 1.7 million jobs. Guess what happens to revenues? They go up. Yeah. Then you can say, okay, now how should I allocate those dollars? You absolutely can preserve the benefits of Social Security and Medicare.
At current levels?
You can keep all the benefits. But what you have to do is you have to grow the economy. You can't say, I'm not going to—
There's no free lunch, though. You've got to—
Go look at the number. If you want to fix anything up here, the first thing you have to do is you've got to get people back to work.
So should Republicans lay out a specific policy agenda on Medicare and Social Security this year?
I think
including the president.
My experience in things is what we ought to do first is let's talk about how do we rebuild the American economy, and how do we get the American economy going? Because the revenues in this country will skyrocket if we. I mean, think about 100 million people not working age. Think of what our revenues would be.
I hear you, but you're willing to say get those people back to work. That will increase revenues, but it doesn't sound like you think Republicans or even yourself should lay out a specific plan on those two issues.
I think what we've got to do is we've got to get people back to work, and then we said, how do we make sure that Social Security and Medicare and the benefits are never cut?
You talk to Trump a lot. The next big decision he has to make is on a running mate. Do you have anyone you'd like to see him pick?
I think a good Republican. He'll make a good pick. He made a good pick in 16. He picked some. I think Mike Pence was a good pick. He picked somebody that that helped him win the election.
Marco Rubio is considered to be on his short list. Do you think he would make a good vice president?
Yeah, Marco's a good guy. Marco's a hard worker.
Given your background as an executive, when did you decide that you wanted a career in the Senate? And this decision as a running for leader. Put you on a different path rather than running for president one day?
Well, first off, your term limit, which I believe in. I believe in term limits.
And so you want to term limit the leader, too, for 6 years, right?
Yeah, I think the leader ought to be term limited. So I believe in term limits. So that it was the opportunity at the time, and I believe that we've got to do everything we can to fix the federal government. So that's why I ran for the Senate.
Okay. And then the last thing we do on this show, this is kind of a weird thing, but our last question is a question that was proposed by our last guest for our next guest. They don't know who it's going to be. I will say this is kind of a strange one. It was Frank Fahrenkopf, longtime Republican, who's the co-chair of the and co-founder of the Commission on Presidential Debates. He asked, what do you think of Dan Snyder, the former owner of the Washington Commanders? And then I want you to finish the interview with a question that we should ask our next guest.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know Dan Snyder, so I couldn't give you an answer. Let's see. So, of course, I like all the Florida football teams, college or pro. And I want them all to win. What should somebody ask?
It can really be anything.
I think the biggest thing is, what is their purpose in life?
Do you have an answer that you can give us on that?
Mine's real simple. My purpose is to make sure I create an opportunity for a kid like me growing up. I was born to a single mom. We lived in public housing. My mom told me that thank God you live in this country because you can be anything. So my purpose is to make sure that's true for every kid in this country.
Is that something you think about like every day?
Every day.
Sort of drives you?
Yeah. That's why I try to think about what I'm doing. Is it making it, you know, is every kid in this country going to have the same shot at the dream that I had?
All right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. That was excellent.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Taber. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Ryan Lizza, a host and executive producer of Deep Dive. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Tell us what you think about the show or who you'd like to hear on Deep Dive. You can email me at rlizza@politico.com. And please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Right.